It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
The right advice at the right time from Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law bring you Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning. Good morning, Cecil. How are
Good
you?
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Cecil Harvell is with us this morning. So what are we going to talk about today?
Ben, the last couple of weeks, Wes and I have been talking about fiduciary liability.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to continue that topic. I'd like to invite any listeners to call in if they have questions about that big word called fiduciary. And, of course, as we've said, fiduciary really is a category of person or corporation or entity that is holding or is in control of property for another.
Mm-hmm.
A fiduciary is an agent under a power of attorney. A fiduciary is an executor or administrator of an estate. A fiduciary is a guardian appointed by the courts to handle the affairs for either an elder incompetent person or a minor child.
Mm-hmm. A fiduciary could be a trustee.
Absolutely. And lastly, a fiduciary is a trustee under a trust. These are all fiduciaries. And of course, Ben, they have a heightened duty to act reasonably on behalf of the other, on behalf of the person and or persons that they are holding the property for. A trustee holds the property for the benefit of the beneficiaries of a trust.
Mm-hmm.
An agent under a power of attorney acts for the benefit of the principal or for the person who has been appointed for the person who appointed them as their agent under the power of attorney. An executor or administrator, of course, is acting on the for the benefit of the heirs of the estate. So this is kind of the background from whence these issues kind of evolve. An example, Ben, that we can talk about is that when we open up an estate and we qualify an executor or an administrator of an estate, the statute in North Carolina says that the creditors have 3 months from the date of the notice of executorship, which is placed in the county paper, if you will, to file their claim, to make known their claim to the executor. And many times executors will, if they're not represented possibly by a lawyer or are not getting good advice, they will go ahead and disperse, if you will, the assets of the estate prior to the running of this 3 month time period. And this is one area where they then can be held personally responsible by the creditor. If you don't hold on to the assets and give the creditors their time, their allotted time to file their claim, then the creditor has the right to come back and say, well, you did not hold the assets for the allotted time period, and therefore we're going to hold you, Mr. or Mrs. Fiduciary, individually responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an example.
Okay.
The same is true with our taxing authorities, the North Carolina Department of Revenue, the Internal Revenue Service. They expect their returns to be filed, even though they're being filed by the fiduciary.
Mm-hmm.
If someone, for instance, is leaves us right now here in, you know, June of 2016, we're going to have to file a return by April 15th of 2017, even though our loved one is no longer alive and able to file that return. Their fiduciary is obligated to do that on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
If the fiduciary does not file by next April, the tax returns of the decedent, the state and federal, then, of course, the fiduciary, again, can be held individually responsible for that failure to do so. So what are we seeing here? What we're seeing is that there is a heightened, as I've used several times, there is an elevated duty mm-hmm. by the fiduciary to do things at a little bit higher level, if you will, than we are maybe obligated to do for ourselves.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Hey, if you don't want to file your tax return, well, okay. If you want to file it late, get an extension, okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to pay a debt, you know, well, okay.
You
there are consequences to all these things,
right.
of course.
Yeah.
But not the kind of consequences that sometimes exist for the fiduciaries that we represent.
So if someone is the executor of an estate,
yes.
and that's a fiduciary position. So if somebody is the executor of the estate, and in that estate there's property that's going to be willed to somebody else, so they have to hold on to that until other things clear?
They do. Yeah. They do. All assets of the estate, even though they may, even though the law mentions that things pass at the moment of death, and mm-hmm. particularly real estate,
mm-hmm.
it passes subject to the administration, debts, expenses of the estate.
Right. Okay.
So the title may pass on to the heirs from the time that our loved one dies, but subject to the claims, the creditors, the tax issues, things of that nature that are out there lurking. Settling an estate, handling things as a trustee, handling things as a power of attorney, an agent under a power of attorney. I like to think of it as, you know, kind of checking the blocks.
Right.
You know,
right.
there are just certain things where there just has to be a moment of pause and you check that block. You know, have I filed the tax returns? Have I seen that all of the bills are appropriately paid? And by the way, appropriately paid or appropriately denied.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Client yesterday in the office who has a large bill, $28,000. That's a lot of money. And really is questioning whether or not his mother owes that money to mm-hmm. that particular creditor.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, we're not going to rush around and instruct this executor, even though the money happens to be there, to pay that creditor until we do some due diligence and make sure that that is a valid debt.
Right, right.
So otherwise, that fiduciary, once again, pay the expense mm-hmm. just for purposes of that, not expense, that bill, if you will, that debt, just for reasons to be expeditious about it or mm-hmm. to be, you know, in a rush about it. Well, if that bill is not valid, mm-hmm. then that fiduciary again can be held responsible by the other heirs of the estate for paying a bill that was not a valid claim.
Okay. Again, we're talking about fiduciary responsibilities, and if you would like to call, you can reach us at 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
If someone is holding money in trust for someone else,
but there are
going to be terms to that trust, right? And if they violate those terms, right?
Well, Ben, you're exactly right, and thank you for being so direct with that. You know, trustees are always wonderful to represent, and I guess, and the mantra that is just said 1,000,000,000 times is, well, what does the trust agreement say? What does the document say?
Mm-hmm.
Because under as a trustee, when you are a fiduciary as a trustee, there is a trust document, and you must follow the terms of the trust. And if there is a question about the terminology, then either one can go to court and get a declaratory judgment as to what the terms to more, you know, accurately define the terms of that trust, Or, of course, there can be an agreement between the beneficiaries as to what the terms of that trust happen to be. This would be known as a, you know, family settlement agreement or an agreement as to terms of trust, you know, signed in by all the folks who have an interest in that trust. We tried very diligently, we good lawyers out there who write trust to make the language clear and to make it clear who the contingent beneficiaries are. What if a child happens to have died? Do they have children? Do they have grandchildren? You know, do the children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren take by right of representation relative to their parent? These are the kinds of terms that need to be clear in a trust. And most times they are. But during at those exceptions where they are not, then the fiduciary is in a is between a rock and a hard place, Ben. And we do, you know, many times have exactly that factual scenario where the trust has been established, the trustee is acting as the fiduciary, things are going fairly smoothly, and then there evolves 3 or 4 or 5 years later a question about the terminology in the trust, and then they come into our office for us to help and guide them through, you know, that you know, that gray area.
All right, we'll have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. You can reach us at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674, taking your questions about your legal life. And we're back on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harvell with us. We're talking about a fiduciary responsibility.
We are. And Ben, another angle that comes to our desk quite often is, you know, tell me, you know, Cecil, what is my obligation to account? What accountings do I need to file? Well, again, now we've got to put this a bit in context. A guardian under a guardianship absolutely has a duty to file an annual accounting. And the clerks of court will see to the fact that those accountings are appropriately filed. And if they are not filed, then expect maybe a visit from the sheriff. Okay? The same is true with regard to an accounting in an estate, be it through an executorship or be it as the result of being an administrator of an estate. The bottom line is that the fiduciary has certain accountings that they must file, a 90-day inventory, then a final accounting within 1 year, and if not, if the estate cannot be closed within that year, then there would then be what's called an annual accounting. And there would be multiple annual accountings until such time as finally there is the final accounting. Now, these accountings are absolutely required by our statute. And again, if a fiduciary in an estate doesn't file them, then again, we could expect a visit from the sheriff. Now, a power of attorney and a trustee ship are a bit different because there we have to be guided by the document, Ben.
Right.
Our powers of attorney that we prepare in our office and most powers of attorney dictate that the agent under the power of attorney should file an accounting with the next of kin. We certainly want them to keep accurate records, and we've talked about that several times here in the last week or so. You know, not a lot of checks to cash.
Right.
Make memos on the checks as to what items are for. When there are large withdrawals, keep kind of a diary as to why we think we need to liquidate $25,000, you know, out of an IRA or a stock account or a CD. Why are we needing that kind of money? Now, again, though, if we can generate an accounting and give that to the other heirs, or at least one other heir, if you will, one other family member, then that is going to do, that's going to be a wonderful thing in terms of mitigating or lessening in any way the conflict that can arise. We find that with fiduciary interaction, human relationships between fiduciaries and their family members is that, you know, Ben, more than anything else, it's about communication. It's about brothers and sisters not knowing what the other one is doing or why they are doing what they are doing, or children not understanding what their stepmother is doing or their stepfather. Again, the more communication, the better. So absolutely, under a power of attorney, if the agent under the power of attorney is able to make an accounting and to deliver that to another family member, that is going to be a very prudent thing to do.
Do you recommend that your power of attorney agents do that proactively, that they go ahead, you mentioned with communication, that without it being asked for?
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They need to keep not only the principal informed, who is the person who granted them the authority, if the principal is still able to has their degree of competency. Mm-hmm. Let's keep in mind, Ben, I have a lot of files like this. Just because you're the agent under a power of attorney and acting for your mother, your grandmother, that doesn't mean that your mother or your grandmother is incompetent necessarily.
Right.
It may be a situation where they simply are, you know, due to advanced age, due to a particular illness, they just are not able to handle things as well as they were once able to. Mm-hmm. But they still want to be kept informed. They still want the respect of their child or grandchild saying, well, you know, Grandma, this is what we're going to do with this CD. I just wanted you to be aware of this, and this is why we are doing it.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So, that's a fine line. That's a hefty challenge. I say that knowing that, but it would be nice if the agent communicates not only with other members of the family if possible,
right,
but also with the principal who appointed them the agent if possible.
And the principal might be incapacitated temporarily, you know, for recovering from surgery.
Of course, if they're temporarily, during that temporary period, you know, you're not going to be able to communicate with the principal.
Mm-hmm.
But I know our listeners are clued in here. There are a lot of listeners out there, Ben, who are acting as the agent for their parent, where their parent is not what one might consider to be completely and totally out of it.
Right.
Or completely and totally, you know, incompetent.
Mm-hmm. They have lucid moments.
Ask questions, right, and they want to know if things are being handled.
Mm-hmm.
These kinds of things, absolutely.
If you have questions, again, you can reach us. If you'd like to give us a call, you can reach us at these numbers.
800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And we'll have more to come with Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell in just a moment. A few minutes left here as we discuss fiduciary responsibilities. And again, the accounting part of it is something that's going to be important. Now that's true at all levels, really, of fiduciary responsibility, right?
Well, we just generally talked about the power of attorney and how we definitely recommend that the agent under the power of attorney communicate to some next of kin member of their family and to the principal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a trustee or a fiduciary under a trust. Again, Ben, here, we're going to be guided by the trust agreement. Does the trust agreement require that there be accountings made to the next of kin or the beneficiaries under the trust. And so the first thing that we would do is we would read the trust agreement, and we would follow the trust language to determine whether or not these accountings are necessary. So again, you begin to see that there is there's law that's applicable in each of these areas. There's no question as a guardian that you must have an accounting. There's no question as an executor that there must be accountings. Under the power of attorney, under a trustee, it becomes a little bit more gray.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular lawyer, not being a litigation lawyer, which I'm not, Ben, and I'm mm-hmm. one of these lawyers that would like for things to go smoothly with a family, if at all possible, I'm one to recommend that the trustee, the power of attorney, communicate.
Right.
And that they give information and accountings as much as possible, because this will more than likely mitigate, if you will, the possibility of litigation mm-hmm. or of confusion with their family members' assets. We do have to remember from the get-go here, Ben, that, you know, this is someone who is holding property that is not their property.
Right, exactly.
It's property right. that they're holding for the benefit of another. And that is a very important concept to keep in mind and to be guided by.
Mm-hmm. And where we've seen abuses of fiduciary responsibility have often been because they felt like it was their property or they felt like they deserved it.
Correct.
So. Yeah. So that's these are important areas. So if you have a lot of activity within a trust, then you should be accounting more frequently for that.
Again, it depends on what the trust document yeah. says when you have a trustee under a trust. We really are guided by the language in the trust.
And an executor is guided by the statutes on that, right?
Correct. That's right.
So. Yep. But of a power of attorney, it might be a little looser arrangement about how that's guided.
Again, the power of attorney, may have language in it. Ours do
mm-hmm.
that require that there be, an accounting made to another member of the family, a next of kin, if you will. But again, we would have to look at the document.
Mm-hmm.
We would have to look at the document.
And we haven't really talked about their trustees that are members of boards, board of directors, maybe have fiduciary responsibility. If you're a member of trustees at a church, you have fiduciary responsibilities too.
They do. The absolutely. Boards, members of boards, trustees of churches, of organizations, of charitable 501c3s, all of these folks stand in a fiduciary relationship to the members, if you mm-hmm. will, of the organization. Absolutely.
So if you want to find out more about how to make this work for you, if you're not quite sure of what your own responsibilities are, you want to contact the folks at Harvell and Collins, and you can find them at 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City, and reach them online at harvellandcollins.com, or pick up the phone at 726-9050. That's 726-9050 for Harvell and Collins.